Hello and welcome to the Wind Power podcast with me, Claire Warren, editor of Wind Power Monthly. In this episode, I talked to speakers at our Blaze USA conference held in Austin, Texas earlier this year. Experts from Vestas, RWE, the Electric Power Research Institute in the US, Envision and Aerones joined me to discuss some of the ways in which the industry is trying to optimise blade performance and reduce the cost of operations and maintenance. What was clear from talking to all of the speakers is just how far we've come in the blades industry over the last decade, but the speed of that development has brought many challenges for operations and maintenance, and as blades get bigger and bigger, those challenges are being magnified. It's hard to imagine that just 10 years ago, blade maintenance wasn't really an issue, as my first speaker, Arnold Wilmink, VP of Reliability Engineering for the Americas at RWE, points out.
If you look at a 40-meter rotor, those blades don't fail. They're pretty much 30 years of operations with limited issues until usually the balsa starts rotting, and then they fly off. But that was the early day turbines. The significant issues started around the 100-meter mark. I mean, we had some with the smaller ones, but those were more cosmetic or performance damages. The catastrophic failures, to me, started really happening with around the 100-meter mark. We saw it with the GE machines. We saw it with some Vestas machines. I mean, that's really where it started to impact more. Lightning has always been there, but also we see that lightning protection, these bigger blades, create issues. The blade bends so much, so that sometimes it just stretches the lightning protection system, which we've seen on our Acciona 3000 turbines, for example, where we constantly rip the cable and then have no lightning protection, which obviously creates catastrophic damages. So when I got into this industry 20 plus years ago, our biggest issues were gearboxes. For a long time, gearboxes were what everybody talked about. And to me, that was a result of going from 600 kilowatts to 2 megawatts in a very fast time. So what we did as an industry, we optimized it in a very fast pace. And that we're doing that right now with blades. And it's not only blades that are creating the issues. You see that blade bearings are now becoming a problem. The blade bolts, maybe the hubs are next, just because of the sheer size and different phenomena that are happening in these blades. I think there's a lot of unknowns on the design side in loading and behavior that might come and bite us in the long run. And then the impact on cost, obviously, is tremendous because of the size and the cost of these blades. So, yeah, I think it's the speed of what we're developing is prone to have some structural fundamental issues that we're already seeing that. Nobody talked about blades 10 years ago in the way we're talking about it now in terms of damages and risk. And, you know, 10 years ago, the biggest turbine was not even a 100-meter rotor. Now we're talking 250 plus meters. I think we're getting close to 300 in offshore. It's tremendously big. So I think like it's the blade, but also the impact of the blade on the support systems to the blade that are going to give us headaches.
In an industry where the cost of maintenance and downtime in particular can be very high, especially offshore, the ability to identify whether a problem with a blade is cosmetic or structural is crucial, as is knowing how much time you might have before a defect reaches a critical point. Failures, says Pasquale Brione, head of global repair at Vestas, are not something that happens too frequently when it comes to more established blades, but it can be a very different story with new designs and as blades get longer and longer. Blade damage in the latter case can reach the highest categories, levels 4 and 5, in unexpected ways.
It's quite today standardized the way to categorize damages. Generally, the first difference is between cosmetic and structural damage. In general, cosmetic, they do progress very slow. I mean, you have 1-2 years time to plan the activity, of course, to do in the best timing, considering what is the capacity factor of the wind farm or, let me say, the seasonality of the area itself. The structural part, of course, is when we go to higher level of category. There has been already a clear understanding of when the damage is so critical that you need to stop the turbine, meaning that you don't have any more time to plan the activity. And in the middle, there are generally 1-2 different categories where you can plan short term, I would say 3-6 months planning the activity. But this is again important because considering seasonality, considering capacity factor of the wind farm, you have time to plan the activity in a way to don't compromise the production of the turbine itself. Of course, in here we need to differentiate what are the blades already staying for a number of years, so you have developed a very good design phases, but also more experience, more data from the service itself, meaning that you are able really to predict in a constant way the data and the damages, of course. Blades early introduced as a new design. Today we are observing longer blades are the ones that they can easily reach high categorization in a surprising way. The most important part in here is when you design the blades, understanding potential failure mode, and then understanding the way that they can easily progress in terms of damage. For also the design in general, the blade has also been more stretched, I would say, in terms of challenge, because of course, being longer blades, it has been also a need to optimize length and weight. And again, of course, this is, bringing all the designer to this key challenge, you know, how to try to balance the robustness of the design itself with the lightness of having a product that can be installed, because those weight is impacting a lot on drivetrain, tower, foundation.
The industry may have a good understanding of the different categories of blade damage, but as Kevin Standage, director of the Global Blade Innovation Centre at Envision Energy, points out, there is no magic bullet when it comes to identifying the precise point at which damage to a blade could become critical. There are, unfortunately, an infinite number of ways in which a blade can fail.
Some of those failures are very detectable. You can see slow changes in the blade, in the structural integrity, in the natural frequencies, in the response. And if you see something changing, you got to stop and go inspect and jump on that right away. Is there a fixed threshold? No. Unfortunately, because there's so many possible things it could be, you have to go out and look at it. Every blade is unique. You have to inspect it, and you have to put an engineer on it and make some critical decisions as to what's acceptable and what's not. However, there are also a lot of failures that just are not detectable. Everything will be fine, and then it's not. So again, that depends on the failure mechanism and the source of what caused that failure. So it's a challenge. There's no smoking gun. There's no easy solution. There's a lot of monitoring systems and stuff like that out there, and they're great. And I, you know, fully support those. Of course, they have to be cost effective. They have to kind of pay for themselves. But even the most perfect, you know, sensors and condition monitoring system, it's not going to guarantee that you won't have a failure.
One of the key issues here, according to RWE's Will Mink, is that while you might be able to see a defect on the outside of a blade, it's another matter when it comes to the inside of the blade.
I think for us, the bigger problem is the internal inspections and the internal damages. I think on the outside, we got a pretty good grip on identifying damages with the team. The tricky biz is the internal damages, especially on a bigger machine. We see that there's a lot of internal damages. I think we're doing a pretty good job because I think last year we had no catastrophic blade failures. The couple of catastrophic failures we've had over the last years usually were failures where the outside didn't look that bad, but on the inside is where the problem was. And the downside of that is there's not a lot of AI and a lot of good technology yet that helps out with that. So both the inspection itself, but also the review afterwards, is a lot more work. There's a manhole usually, so you can crawl in there, but it's a miserable piece of work because you quite often have to have respiration, or at least it's a confined space in a fairly toxic environment. They don't smoothen out the inside of the blades either, so there's glass fiber with resin sticking out, and it's a very narrow space. You can only climb up so far. You can do the repair from the outside, but sometimes, or you have to lower the blade. But the inspections is the tricky bit.
Drones are increasingly being used as a tool for identifying blade damage and can be particularly effective when combined with artificial intelligence, according to Brione at Vestas.
Very, let me say, important is the way to start to predict the damages. And in here, it has been, critical, the way to use drone inspection together with big data, right, through some algorithms, through some artificial intelligence, in a way to start to use as much as possible less people assessing damages. Otherwise, you will have, again, an amount of data where generally, let me say, the false positive, they can be 90%. I mean, imagine just some, dust or rust on the blades that can be detected as anomalies from the system, from the pictures, which indeed at the end are less than cosmetic topic, right? Some years ago, we did a sort of pilot test. So bringing together a human being and those drone inspection by just using artificial intelligence. And the accuracy with the artificial intelligence was, I would say, around the 99%. And by using human being, we were below the 88%, meaning that then the risk of missing a picture or missing an assessment can be very high. Yeah. Several companies, several independent service providers have come with the solution, but generally it's hard, especially for the utilities, to manage different data, what they are called the API, so the applied protocol interface needed to manage the different, let me say, data from the different provider. In here again, a most standardized language to be used for the big data, manage the big data is key for the OEMs, especially when we do consider what's the importance of the historical data and what's the importance of, again, as I said before, predicting potential damage or potential progression of the damage.
Noah Myrant is a senior technical leader at the US-based non-profit research organization, the Electric Power Research Institute, or EPRI. He emphasizes the importance of standardizing defect classification across the industry.
What do we call a certain feature when we have a drone inspecting a wind farm and we discover some type of feature on a blade? What is that? It's still subjective how we determine what that is and how severe it is. We're also judging based on a surface level photo. So what we need to do next is get all of the inspection providers together, get the OEMs together, everyone who's interpreting this data, and we need to agree to the nomenclature and terminology applied for damage terms on blades. Someone may call something a gouge, may also be called a scratch. Some other person may call that a delamination because of something they see in the material that someone else doesn't. So we need to centralize all that information, apply it as metadata to the images so that we can pave the way for better analytics in the future. I also like to think about how we have all of these wind farms collecting drone images. And so right now we have a little bit of data, but you go 5 years forward and now we're all of a sudden we have a lot of data. And maybe we can start applying some big data concepts with predictive learning. And if we apply the right metadata now, we can set ourselves up for success in the future so that when we see a photo of something, AI can tell us exactly what it is, to what extent it's damaged, and how to repair it or correct it to maximize AEP or extend the life of the blade. At EPRI, we've collected over 20,000 instances of damage from many, many different inspection providers, and we've developed word clouds from each of the providers. And some things overlap and some things don't. So we want to get everyone in together to agree to what the terminologies are and work together. Yeah.
Blades, adds Myrant, inherently have flaws, something that we need to understand and bring into operation and maintenance plans.
Unfortunately, they all inherently have flaws because of the ways at which they're made. So part of this problem is going all the way back to the factory and defining quality criteria. There are limitations to what we can see in the factory. And if a fiber wrinkle, for example, is suspected in a blade, they typically will do destructive testing. They will cut through the blade to find that wrinkle. There are certain types of non-destructive evaluation technologies that can scan through thick blades and see these kinds of features. So we want to bring that technology into the factory and bring the due diligence, but also help provide a step change in quality assurance as well. And now, if we want to say a blade can have a certain number of flaws, that's okay, as long as it's acceptable. But we need that data, and we need to bring it to the owner-operator so that they can act upon it. Those precursors in the blades will eventually propagate to the surface of the blade. So the more we know, the more we can plan on our O&M and lower the cost. Get more into the planned maintenance space rather than unplanned.
Working for a Chinese manufacturer has given Standish at Envision an interesting perspective on the impact design can have on operations and maintenance.
It's been actually very educational, very fascinating working for designing blades for a Chinese company. I knew nothing about the Chinese market. Most people don't, because it's kind of like oil and water, the Chinese market versus everyone else. The surprising thing to us as blade designers is we were used to designing for AEP. AEP is king. That's always the most important focus. In China, that has not been the focus. The focus has really been CapEx, making the blades cheaper. So it's very much focus on blade mass. We're quite good at it, but it's a different mode of thinking. And we've learned a lot from that, and it's forced us to get very good with our materials, with our structure, and how we design the blades overall. That we're, you know, designing closer to margins, trying to take material out of the blades. People get nervous about that, but of course, our job as designers is to ensure that the blades survive. You know, if a blade fails, it's on us. It's going to hurt our company more than it's going to hurt anybody else. So of course, we don't want to take unnecessary risks. At least 90% of the failures out there in the field are likely due to manufacturing defects, bad repairs, and or transportation and handling damage to the blades. It's not coming from the design. And oftentimes those sorts of failures occur even if I, as a designer, were trying to put more material into the blade to prevent those kinds of failures. I mean, there's a million different failure points and opportunities for things to go wrong. So, you know, unless you make the blade incredibly heavy everywhere, you know, you just can't design around. You know, if somebody drives a forklift into a blade, like, sorry, it's going to damage the blade. you know, in manufacturing, if somebody puts a wrinkle in the spar cap, I don't care how much extra material you put in there, that blade's going to fail. But it is fair to say that with us getting more aggressive on the designs and challenging margins and safety factors in the design, we really, really have to pay attention and focus on manufacturing quality. Everything, you know, from manufacturing it right in the first place to also being able to inspect and detect defects as soon as you manufacture them. So the whole industry kind of has to go together as we go down this path and as we get more aggressive on the blade designs.
Back in October 2023, the Global Wind Organization and Global Wind Energy Council published a report forecasting the number of wind technicians required to construct, install, operate, and maintain the anticipated global wind fleet up to 2027. Nearly 600,000 technicians will be needed, with more than 240,000 of these roles new recruits to the industry. Greta Krumina, Regional Manager for North America Aerones, says the strain is already being felt in operations and maintenance.
There is huge turnover, starting from blade manufacturing to the companies of the operations and maintenance. And especially if we're talking about people in the industry and blade repair, for example, when the problems really come up, those people, it's not the fact that you can train them within 5 to 10 days, you know, and they're off you go, you know, like good to go and do complex repairs. And the problems that we are now getting with the bigger blades, bigger turbines, the problems are getting bigger in size. And all of that requires more time. And if you do not have the workforce you need, they're not skilled enough, there is a turnover, you're really slowing down the industry itself. And therefore, that has been, I think, one of the biggest challenges recently. And one of the most sick jobs is actually a rope access technician. And it takes a couple of years until they learn, you know, like the real things. But offshore, it's even more challenging. You have less days when you're able to work. The health and safety issues, you know, like all of that. And also the problems for the offshore turbines in terms of the erosion and how prone they are to the lightning damage and lightning strikes. All of that is just bigger there. The weather really challenges the industry and the people and job they need to do. And the industry has very big seasonality. So usually most of the things take place from May to September, if you're speaking about Europe or North America. And many of those technicians are let go throughout the winter season, and then they end up in a different company from springtime.
The scarcity of human resources needed to do the repairs and the limited timeframes available from a weather perspective mean repairs are often limited to Category 4 and 5 issues, when being able to focus on Category 3 repairs might go a long way towards reducing operations and maintenance costs. This is where robotics, including some of those presented at our Blades USA conference, could help. Using robots for some of the more preventative work, for instance, leading edge repairs, could free up manpower for other work.
I'm a strong believer that there is no way without automatization, robotics, and really new innovations, new techniques, new ways how to do the maintenance. And it's not just about the cost, it's about the quality, because we all are human, we all make mistakes, and especially on some of the repairs that you do, they have to be redone afterwards. And then you always have this challenge of whether, when are you allowed to work and when are you not allowed? And especially in the, you know, autumn and winter times, the days when you're not allowed to work, they're more than the ones when you can perform the work. So it's, again, slowing down and just increasing the size of the problems. I think the industry has just started to offer robotic leading edge repairs, but the crack repair is something I think that's upcoming. But also from the inspection side, I think, yeah, like 10 years ago, people were taking camera photos of the wind turbine blades and doing inspections like that. And now we like drones, that's something common. And we cannot imagine the industry like in any other way than the inspections with the drones, right? So I think that's the same that's going to happen with robotics at the moment. This is a common thing now. So I think that's where we are going. But definitely the repairs, the big repairs, crack repairs, that is kind of the next step where we need to go with robotics and innovation.
Looking to the future, Will Mink hopes that we will get to the stage where robots can conduct repairs on an operational turbine.
Yeah, I think that's for offshore. I would think at some point we'll go to situations where we're trying to do repairs while running, which is fairly common in gas-fired power plants, where they make repairs on generators or make repairs to some extent on the equipment while it's operating. I don't think we're there yet in terms of the design allowing for that. But I would argue if you go to 25 megawatts or more, finding ways to keep the machine running becomes more and more prominent, especially with the current incentives, especially in places like the UK or Germany, but to some extent here as well. The lost money of the downtime probably allows for a different way of looking at it. The inspections seem to be getting there, where drones can kind of follow the blade to some extent, but I don't think we're anywhere close to doing repairs while operating. I'm not even sure if it's easy on a blade, given it disrupts the flow and the weight. So I think on the rest of the turbine, maybe. On blades, it might be challenging. So we need to make sure that they actually just don't fail or don't break. Offshore is a different animal, right? Where the cost of your crane or your jack-up vessel usually is so high, it's probably easier to take a blade off, put a new blade on, take the blade to shore, repair it, and then use it on the next machine if you can standardize enough. So standardization might be, for offshore, the key to be able to do different types of maintenance.
Thanks for listening to the Wind Power Podcast. We'll be back soon with another episode exploring the issues which are driving the wind industry today. In the meantime, for the latest news, expert opinion, and analysis, visit windpowermonthly.com.